Welcome back to the Space Case Air Show with my space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin, and our special guest this week for Science for Good, Adam from Geneva Lakes Astrophysics and STEAM, who is talking to us about the different initiatives that this organization does, particularly for those that are visually impaired, which is such a like out there concept, I think, for the average person. If you were saying like, we do, you know, we make accessible things for astronomy for the visually impaired, they'd be like, what? And so Kavi, during our break, came up with a good idea, and he suggested that we play something for you that has been sonified. So basically giving an assigned sound for different objects in the night sky. We're going to play a little clip of something for you, and this is your opportunity to win something from the station. We'll send you something if you can guess it. I feel like this is going to be incredibly difficult for the average person, but give us your best shot what you think this sound is. So if you have an idea of what that sound may be, let us know in the comments on our social media, wherever you see this episode being referenced. If you think you know what that is, make a comment. And if you're right, I will send some swag your way. Adam and I are also, in addition to the various things that we do in our own individual corners of the SciComm and Astro world, we're coming together back to kind of like the OG, like the place that inspired us all. And if I have to give a little backstory of my personal meaning towards Yerkes, so Yerkes Observatory is where we're going to be helping with a Messier marathon. And Adam used to be affiliated with that when GLASS was the education department within Yerkes Observatory. And I actually, and I don't know why, because the guys know my backstory as well, my mom would take us to Yerkes for star parties on the lawn. When I was really little, I remember a comet passed by and there were astronomers with telescopes on the lawn. And I remember going to that and being really confused why we couldn't go inside the observatory. Like, why we couldn't use the observatory? Why were we on the lawn and not being able to look through the big telescope?
Going to the observatory, just not right. Go to the observatory.
Right. Well, I mean, you could take tours of the observatory, and then they would explain on the tour that, you know, it's a working scientific instrument. It's not exactly something that just the general public can, like, willy-nilly use. Luckily for me, in the very tail end of its of the way that it was operating previously, out of, I would assume, probably a very desperate grab for money to keep things going, they started opening tours up for nighttime telescope views. And so you could book a nighttime tour and get to look through the big telescope. And I had to reschedule four times because of the weather. And I was doggedly like, no, I hear rumors that they're going to close this down. And then no one knew at that time what was going to happen. And I was like, no, I am going to get to look through this telescope that Hubble did, that Carl Sagan did, like Sarah Treadwell is going to get to see through this telescope too. God damn it. And so I rebooked it four times, finally got to look through the big telescope. And then I think a month later it shut down. So that's sort of my, you know, my backstory with the observatory. And so it was sort of, I don't know, surreal to get to walk into that building last month and be there after that was, you know, 2018, the last time I saw it, and just kind of revisit the space that, you know, I got to go on tour so many times as a kid. So to be able to partner and be a part of this Messier marathon is super meaningful to me. But Adam, why don't you explain to people what a Messier marathon is, and have you ever successfully completed a Messier marathon? Because this is like, I don't know, the third year I've been involved with you in some shape or form of a Messier marathon. So have you ever actually finished it?
So, Messier Marathon. So, if anybody that's not familiar with Charles Messier, I'll give the kind of the short version of this story, but Long story short, he really liked comets and he didn't really care about anything else. So every time he spotted something faint and fuzzy in the sky and it didn't move and it was not a comet, he wrote it down and he was annoyed. So he moved on to the next one. And after a while, he built up this list and then others came along and helped fill the list out.
Right.
But it ended up being 110 objects of things that he had no interest in, did not care about, were uninteresting to him. He just wanted comets. And now today, it's the list of the most celebrated like objects in the Northern Hemisphere. And it's what he's famous for. So it's really one of those, the ultimate ironies of like astronomy history there. And now once a year during, I think from March into early April, the sun isn't in the way of any of them in the sky. So when the sun sets, if you start right away, you can get all 110 objects in one night. And to answer your question, I fortunately have not finished or completed one entirely.
How far did you get?
So the first time we tried, 58 is the farthest that I've gotten. For sure.
Wow.
It's impressive.
That was last year. And that was, we had EV scopes going. So we actually made commemorative posters. And so this Mezier Marathon will actually be the third straight Mezier Marathon I've participated in on the Yerkes Lawn. So 3 years running. Back in 2021, the board was nice enough to just let us camp out in the lawn with an EV scope. And we live streamed it. And thank you to Sarah for helping make that interesting and fun for the audience on YouTube at the beginning of that. And then last year, we held a bigger event and the Yerkes Future Foundation was very gracious. They allowed our guests to come in, take a tour of the building. They even got to go up and see the telescope, obviously not look through it yet, but they got to go get a whole tour of the building, which was really, really cool of them. And now we're working with them to help them kind of launch their initial star party. And then after that, as a thank you to all the amateur astronomers that are helping with the event, we get a Mezier Marathon on the grounds of the coolest observatory in the world, in my opinion.
It is one of the coolest. Cool. And I guess I didn't also explain why it's so cool. So when it was built, that was the world's largest refracting telescope. That thing is a monster. Even when I went in and saw it last month, a couple of weeks ago, it took my breath away again. It's so big. It's really impressive. But then the architecture of the building is like kitschy unique. It's so funny. The guy who designed it, he put all these different like hidden meanings in the columns and the rock sculptures. So you kind of like, once you know the stories and you go around, because there's the one that he was knocking on. Was it Yerkes again? Was it him with the bee and the nose? Was it Yerkes or who was that?
The
was
bee
it
and the nose, that was Rockefeller.
Oh, Rockefeller.
He was commenting on the University of Chicago stinging him for more money. As a bee, Rockefeller was the main funder of the University of Chicago from its conception. Inception?
Yeah, conception. And so, there was a bee stinging the nose. And then when it was noticed, there... cooler heads did not prevail and they were like carve that out, so like the bee got like chipped out of the column. So it's a really fascinating place and it's really cool. And so we've been doing this marathon thing for a couple of years. I don't think it was a participant last year because I think I was on my Mars expedition when you guys did that last year, so I wasn't able to participate. But the EV scopes, by the way, are these really high-tech, very cool telescopes that can connect to the internet and show pictures to people's phones. Like you can literally connect to it with your phone and you can see it. So it's been a super handy tool for these kinds of outreaches. Cause I know some serious astronomers are like, brr, EV scopes, meh, 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 meh. newfangled technology, meh, meh. I'm gonna let the guys again take over really quick and ask any questions about the Mezier Marathon, and maybe what are the challenges, or what do you find unique about it, or what is, I mean, I guess I should also give the context that Adam and I are in the Midwest, so what's the challenge? I can tell you that already. It's freaking cold. This is why I don't do it. Like I stay up for a while and then I'm like, you all have fun. So
it sounds like perfect viewing conditions to me.
I don't know if you have, I'm going to let Benjamin start this time. Do you have anything you'd like to ask about Mezier Marathons, Yerkes?
What's the, or I'm sure there's some, but what's the easiest one to pinpoint and get out of the way quickest, and what's the hardest one to spot? Because some of them are actually quite small. Mm-hmm. They look not much different than a bright star, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Right. Yeah, so the easiest one, right out of the gate, Pleiades. I mean, you can get that as soon as the sun's down. You can, with a good dob, you can start to pick out the Pleiades already. So the easiest one to pick out early is the Pleiades. It's also very high as soon as the evening starts. As far as the hardest ones go, I'd have to actually look at my sheet. I think there are some that, because, especially from like the Yerkes lawn, and so I guess my experience comes from just doing it from the lawn, there are some that you can't actually get. And I think they're just some open clusters that are very, very low, like maybe even 20 degrees above the horizon, and the tree line completely wipes them out. I think, and it's like a small open cluster. So the open clusters, I think, I'd probably put in there as sometimes they can be the hardest, because, so with open clusters, sometimes you're not sure if that's the open cluster or just more stars.
Smudge.
Yeah.
And that's why he cataloged him in the first place. Right. That's a smudgy.
Which is why
thing.
Also I should note, to do a Messier marathon in the Midwest is not probably the top locational wise place to go and do it. You ideally want to be like in the desert, somewhere where you're in a dark sky location. There's not a lot of tree line to block it. You're also not freezing. You know, I feel like, I know I'm kind of focusing on that multiple times, but seriously, like, this is why I coin myself as the lazy astronomer. I'm like, how cold is it out there? Rare green comet? I don't care. That's too cold. No, I don't care. Kavi.
I had a question that maybe it's not something that you guys have considered recently, but it's become something that's more and more prevalent in Australia, is connecting outreach groups with traditional astronomy of the Aboriginal peoples and First Nation peoples in Australia. I'm curious, is that something that is happening at all in your neck of the woods? I know that, like, Milwaukee itself as a name is an Algonquin name, right? So I'm sure that there's a lot of interesting Native American astronomy or history that could be taught.
Absolutely, yeah. There's tons of opportunities for that. I do know we have had kind of talks and communications with some tribes that are further north in Wisconsin about doing stuff with astrotourism as ways for them to kind of help generate revenue and kind of, kind of get people involved and introduce more people to their culture, because it's always really interesting to learn about other people's stories. I mean, there's only so many times I can talk about Orion or Cassiopeia and Perseus. I mean, sometimes I just need something new and a different take on some sort of famous pattern. But as far as like GLASS itself, we really, really want to make sure that if we go into any area that's not something we have a background in, we want to be working with the community that really knows that and has like that connection to it. And we haven't really developed any of those relationships yet. So we don't really want to jump into the world of, talking about Native American star lore, because I know there are certain stories that you are not allowed to tell in different seasons. So we don't want to offend anyone. We don't want to, create any issues or, mistell and, tell the wrong story and spread things that aren't true. So we'd love to develop those kind of ties and be able to incorporate that into what we do, but it's not something we've done yet.
Yeah.
Fair enough. As like you said at the beginning, it's you want to be developing content with the groups that the content is for rather than developing it for people. Yeah, I respect that. Mm-hmm. And if there is anybody listening out there who has a connection that could be helpful, I would highly recommend tweeting to us or reaching out to us or to GLASS. Maybe.
Yeah.
Could be room for future collaboration.
On that note, I'd like to give one little shout out to the UW-Milwaukee Planetarium. Gene Creighton, who is the director there, has put together planetarium shows with those communities and has done an incredible job.
Really?
So I know that, I don't know, they don't put it on often, but when they do, they actually have worked with those communities and have done a really amazing job.
Oh, well.
That's super cool. Yeah, I know that NASA Astrobiology focuses on that as well, and they have an initiative that they do like camps for that kind of content. And but Daniela, who I admire very much, has, she said that it took so long to develop the relationships to get to that point, to be able to even get to that point. So it's definitely not something, yeah, that you want to barrel into without some consideration and, you know, mindfulness. Sure. So, but that's a great question. And yeah, actually, you know, the only time I think I've ever seen the Milky Way was way up north in kind of like the Rhinelander area, which is very, very far north Wisconsin. But the pro and the con of that is you can see it. There's not a lot of light pollution, but you're in the middle of forests. So you see a little patch right there, but that's about all you get.
Is it cold?
In the summer it's warm, but so it's by, I used to go up there vacationing by a lake, and the lake, oh gosh, Kavi, I hate converting temperatures for some reason. I don't know why. Oh, it was cold. Oh, that's a cold lake. It's like, and maybe we'll get to 70 degrees Fahrenheit. So what's that? Celsius. Stupid.
Oh, at least three.
Three at least. And maybe 17 turkeys. Yeah, so freaking cold. Well, actually, that lake was so cold that, I don't want to say seaweed because it's not seaweed, but you know what I mean? Like, plant life in the water can't grow because it's too cold and they don't get enough sunlight. So it's a really... Yeah. Cold, clear lake. Emphasis on the cold. well, we are going to have to actually wrap this up. I just realized we're already hitting 16 minutes and that went super duper duper fast. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Adam and I, we're going to be doing the Messier Marathon at Yerkes Observatory, March 17th. iRock Space Radio will be airing pseudo-ish live. And I say pseudo-ish live because there's going to be a bit of a delay, but that will give the opportunity for what I'm hoping to do is to nab kids and stuff to come and talk about what they love about space. And then we can say, hey, grandma, grandpa, tune in to iRock Space Radio. And so that little delay will probably actually be helpful. But we're going to be airing live from that event. I'm probably, again, I'm a wimp, so I don't think I'll be making it through the whole Messier Marathon. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Adam will be there with Glass. He's got a whole crew assembled. We got food coming in for the volunteers. It's going to be really awesome. And in like really exciting news, when we've talked about bringing him on to talk about this event, I had thought maybe we would need to do so in an effort to kind of help promote it. But we had a meeting the other day and the tickets almost are already sold out for the whole nice event. So yeah, wow. We are like not struggling whatsoever to get a crowd coming in. So fingers crossed. Adam almost jinxed it. I'm saying almost because it'll be fine. He's like, you know, every year I've done it, it's always been clear. And he's like, I'm probably jinxing it now, haven't I? So it's going to be fine. And I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you so much for coming on, Adam.
This is my pleasure.
Awesome to meet you, Adam.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Pleasure to meet you. Thank you for coming.
And as a reminder, you can find him at, is it glasseducation.org, right? Is that what she said? Okay. Glass Education, 1S on that, Glass Education. You can find all their initiatives that they're doing. Find out how you can help support them. I'm sure there are some links to also like donating if you wanted to donate to their cause. And, you know, again, social media, Space K Sarah, Kavi Rose at Fun Fact Science, Benjamin at Science, actually Science, depending on your platform. And you're listening to the Space K Sarah Show here on iRock Space Radio.